Before we begin, I want to acknowledge that this episode contains descriptions and discussions of suicide, racial violence, and harm to Black bodies, as well as the painful legacy of lynching in America, past and present. This content may be upsetting, re-traumatizing, or overwhelming, especially for Black listeners and those who've lost loved ones to violence. Please take care of yourself. Step away if you need to. Your well-being matters more than anything we talk about here. This story is heavy, but it's important. It deserves to be told, and it deserves to be heard.
New at 4, a second independent autopsy will be performed for a Delta State University student. Trey Reed was found hanging from a tree on the campus earlier this week. While Mississippi's medical examiner ruled Reed's death a suicide, yesterday, attorney Ben Crump says another autopsy will be performed. That will be paid for by Colin Kaepernick, known he's his Know Your Rights Camp Autopsy Initiative. Reed's family is looking for more answers. Final toxicology reports could take 2 to 4 weeks to complete. New at 4.
And now to news developing out of Mississippi, where a coroner's office is maintaining that there is no evidence a young Black man was attacked before he was found dead on the Delta State University campus.
Now Trey Reed's family is ordering an independent autopsy. Now a warning, some of you may find this story triggering. The 21-year-old was found hanging from a tree on campus Monday morning. The coroner says a preliminary exam shows no signs of broken bones or assault, but Reed's mother told local reporters that she questions what happened to her son. She says she spoke to her son Friday, and he was excited to attend the university. The family says the school has not reached out to them, and they're getting information secondhand from the media.
As we move forward, we're just looking for answers that a simple camera on the university's campus will answer.
We are so concerned about what's going on. We're getting mixed information. We're hearing everything on the media. So we just want the truth. That's all we're looking for.
Reed was a first-year student and had only been on campus for 1 month when he was found dead. Authorities initially ruling this a suicide. Civil rights attorney Ben Crump is leading an investigation into Reed's death, though. He says Trey Reed was deeply loved and respected by those who knew him, and added Reed's family and the campus community deserve a full independent investigation to uncover the truth about what happened. We cannot accept vague conclusions when so many questions remain. The NAACP posted an image saying a man was lynched yesterday in a post about Trey Reed. The organization expressed skepticism that there was no evidence of foul play in Reed's death and wrote, "Our people have not historically hung ourselves from trees."
Welcome to the In Between Podcast. I'm your host, Mel Barrett, and today I want to tell you about a boy named Trey Reed. And I want to be completely honest with you. I do not want to tell this story. I do not want to once again walk us through the trauma of another young Black body, violated, discarded, and disrespected. These stories leave scars. They sit in the soul, and they make us relive horrors that never should have happened in the first place. But I'm telling you the story anyway, because not telling it, pretending it didn't happen, or trusting the institutions that have failed us for centuries to just handle it quietly is not an option. If we want justice, if we want accountability, then we have to lift our voices and apply pressure. That means telling the truth, loudly, publicly, relentlessly. This is the story of DeMar Travian, Trey Reed, and what happened to him cannot be allowed to fade into silence. Trey was 21 years old, a son, a brother, a friend, a first-generation college student, something his entire family took pride in. He was attending Delta State University in Cleveland, Mississippi, chasing a dream not just for himself, but for everyone who had helped get him there. Trey wasn't just enrolled, he was thriving. He had been on campus for just 30 days, but his presence was already being felt. His professors described him as respectful and engaged. Fellow students remembered him as warm, funny, and generous with his time. He made people feel seen. He made people feel safe. Trey was known for his ambition and determination. He was goal-oriented, with plans to enter business or law, fields where he could uplift others and provide leadership. Back home, he was the dependable one, the one you could call in the middle of the night, the one who remembered birthdays and never missed a family gathering. He helped take care of his younger siblings. He stayed out of trouble. He followed the rules. He believed in doing things the right way. He didn't go off to college just to get a degree. He went to set a new standard for his family's future. And then, just 1 month into that journey, everything ended. On the morning of September 15th, 2025, Trey was found hanging from a tree on Delta State's campus. No note, no signs of prior distress, no history of mental illness, no warning. Within hours, campus police and the Mississippi Bureau of Investigation ruled his death a suicide.
New information about Trey Reed, the 21-year-old black student who was found dead and hanging from a tree at Mississippi's Delta State University. Police are now ruling his death a suicide after performing an autopsy. It remains an active investigation. The FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office say they are further reviewing the case.
No formal investigation, no witness interviews, no fingerprints lifted, no thorough autopsy performed at that time. Just a statement, a ruling, and a closed door. But his family, they never believed it. How could they? They knew Trey. They knew his heart, his goals, his excitement about the future, his love for his girlfriend, his daily calls home, the paper he'd just finished writing for class that night, the plans he had for the weekend. To them, and to so many watching this case unfold, none of it adds up. It doesn't just stretch belief, it insults it. And the more we learn, the more we understand, Trey Reed didn't just deserve a future. He deserved justice. And we're not going to stop until he gets both. The first autopsy, the one conducted by the state, lined up perfectly with the official narrative. No visible bruises, no lacerations, no broken bones, no signs of a struggle. The state medical examiner concluded that Trey had died by hanging. The coroner echoed that conclusion, stamping suicide on the paperwork almost immediately. It was sort of swift, clinical, and final. But Trey's family didn't buy it, because they knew their son. They knew his heart, his hopes, and his mindset. Trey was upbeat. He had just submitted a paper for class, a paper due the very next morning. He had dreams. He had plans. He didn't sound like someone preparing to end his life, especially not in a way so public, so jarring, so historically loaded as hanging from a tree. So, unwilling to accept what felt like a rushed and incomplete conclusion, his family pushed for answers. They secured a second independent autopsy, this time outside the reach of the state. That autopsy was reportedly funded by former NFL quarterback and civil rights activist Colin Kaepernick through his Know Your Rights Camp initiative, which supports families in cases like Trey's where racial bias or institutional neglect may be involved. This second examination told a very different story, and we'll get into it after a short break. The independent pathologist reportedly found evidence of blunt force trauma to the back of Trey's head. That one detail alone changes everything. Because blunt force trauma means impact. It means force. It suggests a possible assault, one that contradicts the entire premise of a quiet, self-inflicted death. In plain terms, it means Trey could have been attacked, hit, killed, and then positioned in that tree, staged to look like a suicide. A modern-day lynching masked as self-harm. But here's what's even more disturbing. Despite this new finding, this physical evidence that strongly indicates foul play, nothing has changed. The state hasn't revised the cause of death. The coroner hasn't amended the report. Local authorities haven't reopened the case. The Mississippi Bureau of Investigation hasn't launched a new inquiry. No one has explained why a documented head injury, discovered after the state had already closed the book on Trey's life, wasn't enough to at least raise a few red flags. Why wasn't this treated as suspicious? Why wasn't the scene re-examined? Why hasn't the person who found him been questioned publicly? And why is there no pressure to reconcile these conflicting autopsy results? Most importantly, why is Trey Reed's name being quietly moved to the margins when everything about his death demands scrutiny? Because silence in the face of contradiction isn't just negligence, it's complicity. And Trey's family, like so many others before him, deserve better than that silence. And let's be clear, Trey was found in the only part of the Delta State campus without surveillance cameras, a known blind spot. But this wasn't just some forgotten patch of campus. It was a very specific place, a stretch near the pickleball courts, surrounded by trees, just out of view of university security systems. This wasn't random, it was routine. A well-known gathering place where white students would pull up in their pickup trucks, crank music, drink, smoke, and hang out long into the night. And everyone knows that's where there are no cameras. And it just so happens that's exactly where Trey's body was found. Officials initially told his family they had video of Trey taking his own life, but that turned out to be false. Ask yourself why. The only video they had was footage of him walking calmly in front of his girlfriend's dorm, talking on the phone. Not distressed, not erratic, certainly not suicidal. That call, by the way, is reportedly what prompted Trey to walk outside that night, but we still don't know who he was talking to. That's the last moment he was seen alive. Now here's where the context becomes even more troubling. That very same camera free zone, the one where Trey was found, was also home to a makeshift memorial for Charlie Kirk. Just 5 days before Trey's death, on September 10th, Kirk, a controversial far-right political figure and founder of Turning Point USA, was shot and killed during a speaking appearance at Utah Valley University. Kirk had long been a polarizing figure on college campuses, known for pushing inflammatory rhetoric, targeting Black, Brown, LGBTQ+, and immigrant communities. He was loved by the far right and deeply criticized by students and activists across the country. In the days after his death, tensions escalated, especially at universities like Delta State, where a conservative student presence clashed with those pushing for racial justice and equity. According to multiple reports, Trey had defended a fellow Black student online after she had made critical remarks about Kirk in the wake of his death. The defense sparked arguments with a group of white male students, two of whom were reportedly enrolled at DSU. Screenshots of those exchanges exist. It wasn't just a debate, it got heated, and it was personal. Days later, Trey would be found dead, and somehow he ended up in the same unmonitored patch of campus where Kirk's memorial had quietly appeared. Whether that's symbolic or sinister, we don't know, but it's not a detail to ignore. The blind spot isn't just where the cameras don't see, it's where the truth keeps disappearing. Cleveland, Mississippi is just 35 miles from Money, the same soil where Emmett Till was kidnapped, tortured, and lynched in 1955. It's the same Mississippi Delta that has soaked up more blood than we will ever fully know. The same region where Black life has too often been devalued, disregarded, and destroyed. Delta State University, where Trey's body was found, began as a whites-only teacher college in 1925. It did not admit its first Black students until 1967, nearly 13 years after Emmett's murder. That desegregation came reluctantly and was met with hostility, like so many institutions in the Jim Crow South. Though the signage has changed and the policies have shifted, the power structures, the unspoken norms, the lingering racial divides remain embedded in the institution's DNA. Mississippi holds the grim distinction of having the highest number of recorded lynchings in American history. Over 650 documented Black lives taken by mobs, by rope, by fire, and by silence. And those are just the ones that were written down. The reality is even darker. So when a 21-year-old Black man is found hanging from a tree in the same region on a predominantly white campus, in an area without cameras, and his death is ruled a suicide within hours, without witnesses, without a confirmed timeline, without his phone, how can we not hear the echo of our own history? How can we not feel the weight of the past pressing on the present? Ida B. Wells, the pioneering journalist and anti-lynching activist, once called it a red record, a painstaking ledger of the racial violence inflicted on Black Americans in the 19th century. Back then, the justifications were always the same: alleged crimes, social slights, or just being in the wrong place at the wrong time while Black. Today, the names of the crimes have changed. Now it's mental health. Now it's no signs of foul play. Now it's suicide. But the results feel eerily familiar. Another Black life cut short. Another family dismissed. Another official report sealed and shelved. We've entered a new chapter of the Red Record, one where lynchings are no longer carried out on courthouse lawns at high noon, but are instead written off with autopsy reports that don't match the facts. A chapter some are calling lynching by suicide. The same brutality cloaked in modern language. The same silence now backed by press releases instead of torches. And Trey's not alone. His story is not the exception. It's part of a pattern. A disturbing growing pattern of Black men and women found dead under suspicious circumstances and a system that races to shut down any scrutiny before the truth can take root. We've seen it in Houston, in Georgia, in Florida, in Illinois.
These are four different separate cases of other Black people who have been found hanging from trees unalive. Damo was found, Dominique Alexander was found hanging from a tree in Fort Tyron Park in New York City. Fort Tyron is in the upper part of Manhattan. And again, I live in New York City. And in that case, in 2020, they also said that it was a suicide. And his family is still fighting today. Justice for Dominique Alexander. Here's another case. Black teenager found hanging outside school in Texas. Here's another case in New Jersey. He was found hanging after he outed pedophiles. This young lady was found hanging from a tree outside of Austin High School. This 29-year-old black man was found hanging from a tree in North Georgia. In June of 2025, yes, this summer, Earl Smith, a 58-year-old grandfather, was found hanging in a tree in our state capital of Albany, New York. And they tried to say that that was also a suicide. As all black people know, black people do not unalive themselves in this manner because of all the things. That's something that we just simply don't do.
We'll talk about some of those cases next. But we start here with Trey, because the soil may be the same, but our silence doesn't have to be. More on this after a break. Just days after Trey Reed's death, something deeply unsettling unfolded across the country. In Houston, Texas, six black bodies were pulled from waterways between September 15th and September 20th, the same time period Trey's case was unfolding in Mississippi. Only one of those victims has been identified publicly, Jade Sage McKissick, a 20-year-old University of Houston junior who had been reported missing 4 days before her body was found in Brays Bayou. Authorities say her autopsy showed no signs of foul play, but five others remain unnamed. Their deaths remain officially unconnected. Police have assured the public that there's no serial killer. Still, six black bodies in 5 days, with no clear cause, no full identification. The silence is as loud as it is chilling. This is all happening in the immediate aftermath of the shooting death of Charlie Kirk. Kirk was gunned down on September 10th during an appearance at Utah Valley University. His death sent shockwaves through conservative circles, but something else began to ripple too. Tensions, hostilities, fear. In the days following Kirk's death, Trey Reed, who had reportedly stood up online for a fellow black student being harassed for her anti-Kirk comments, began receiving threats and engaging in heated arguments with several white male students. And days later, Trey was dead. In Georgia, the story was equally heartbreaking and bizarre. Kadir and Nazir Lewis, 19-year-old twin brothers, were discovered dead from gunshot wounds atop Bell Mountain on March 8, 2025. Investigators initially called it a murder-suicide. Then they changed the ruling to a double-suicide. But their family never bought it. The brothers had airline tickets to visit family. They were last seen calmly purchasing snacks at a gas station. No signs of distress, no suicide notes, no clear explanation. Just another tragic story swept under the weight of inconclusive evidence and official closure. Go back further, and the pattern only deepens. In 2020, Robert Fuller and Malcolm Harsh were found hanging from trees in separate California cities, just days apart. Both cases were ruled suicides. Public protests erupted, but authorities stood firm on the findings, and still, questions linger. Then there's Jelani Day, Yolna Lubrin, Denoris Richardson, Javian McGee. Different names, different cities, same story. Black individuals found dead under disturbing, unexplained circumstances. Each case ruled suicide or undetermined. Each family left with more questions than answers. So what happens when patterns form, when cases no longer feel isolated but connected by the thread of a system that repeatedly rushes to close the book before the story is fully told? Trey Reed's death wasn't just personal. It was political. It was historical. It was part of something bigger, something older than any of us. The past may not repeat itself in the same way, but its echoes are undeniable. And in these echoes, there is a call to action. Because for every case dismissed as suicide without due diligence, a community is silenced. A truth is buried, and it's up to us to dig it back up. Trey's family is represented by Benjamin Crump, one of the most visible civil rights attorneys of our time. He stood with the family at Trey's funeral, and he has joined the call for justice.
Ben, they say there's no foul play. We need an update on the autopsy. People want clarification on this. Everybody's interested in it. It should be on every single network. What's going on?
If it was my child, I would want complete transparency. I wouldn't want to take the word of anybody who comes out day one and says, well, there's no foul play involved. Well, how can you rush to a conclusion that quickly? And so we are going to have an independent autopsy that Colin Kaepernick, Know Your Rights Autopsy Initiative, is going to help have done on behalf of the family.
I'm glad to see that the Kaepernick initiative is out there doing good work.
We know from the past, when the system refuses to investigate itself, it takes public pressure to force action. And that's why we're here. That's why we're talking about Trey Reed, because the truth matters and silence is complicity. So now what? We've laid out the facts. You've heard the contradictions. You've heard the pain. But we can't stop here. We need answers. We need pressure on every level. Campus leadership, city officials, state investigators, federal agencies. We need real oversight. We need to push for every bit of evidence to be made public. And we need to keep this story alive. Then Trey becomes another name on a long, unending list. And we refuse to let that happen. Let's demand justice. Let's demand accountability. And let's not stop until we get it. If this story moved you, if it made you think, share it, post it, talk about it. Because someone out there knows what really happened to Trey Reed. And we're not going anywhere until the truth is known. The In Between podcast is written, edited, and hosted by me, Mel Barrett, and is a production of Ruby Grace Productions. Special thanks to my mentors, Amber Hunt, Ellen Marsh, and Rebecca Lavoie, for their super smart guidance and support. If you want ad-free exclusive content, bonuses, and lives, head on over to the In Between Podcast Patreon and sign up. The intern level starts at just $4, and there's already 75-plus ad-free episodes for you to binge right now. You can watch my new show, Something's Off with Rebecca Lavoie, over on YouTube at Something's Off Pod, or listen on Patreon. Episodes drop weekly on Fridays. Stay tuned after this episode for the trailer of Something's Off. Follow the In Between Podcast on Blue Sky, Facebook, and YouTube at In Between Pod, and on Instagram at The In Between Pod Official. On TikTok, you can follow me at Jack of All Trades DC. Thanks for listening. Be good people. Don't do murder. You know how we dig into stories that don't sit right, that cases where justice feels incomplete? Well, I've got something new for you. Rebecca Lavoie from Crime Writers On and I are teaming up for a brand new show called Something's Off. Every week, we'll take on the cases that make you stop and say, wait, what? From current cases like the murder of Sandra Birchmore to the trial of Karen Reed to the Long Island serial killer and all the way back to the Menendez brothers, when the story doesn't add up, that's where we dig in.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie.
And I'm Mel Barrett, and this is Something's Off.
He still pressed her, and when he did, she was just like, come on. Like, that was her. It was just like, no, that's ridiculous.
It was exactly how one should respond when being challenged with something that either isn't true or is a distortion of the truth.
How much longer can this go on?
He said, how do you know there wasn't something under where his head landed? And she said, because I saw the photos.
She's not even telling the jury that he made a mistake.
So can we talk about this kind of like bombshelly thing that happened today?
Yeah, you want to talk about the x-rays?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a new tell today.
Where
and
he would
it's
repeat
hilarious.
Back the answer that they just said?
So the tell that I saw, he would ask her a yes or no question. Like he wanted a yes and she would go, no. And he would go, oh. he would just go, oh. You know, mathematical equations. How about the fact that he said there were no x-rays?
Correct.
He, too, is a liar.
I mean, either he was lying or Hank Brennan was lying. And Alan Jackson definitely intimated Hank Brennan has been lying to you. He said to her,
do you agree that a brain is very soft, consistent with, for example, tofu?
Oh, gross.
No. And then Bev said, I'll strike that. No comments.
Yeah.
Watch Something's Off with Mel Barrett and Rebecca Lavoie on YouTube and exclusively on Patreon starting mid-October. I'll leave you a link in the show notes.